Hello and welcome to the ABCs of Rock podcast. I am your host, Nathan Schur. The ABCs of Rock is proudly part of the Weston Media Podcast Network. I thank you for joining me on my journey through the alphabet from A to Z, where each week I pick a new band or musician going in alphabetical order, no exception. It's not only been a blast, it's also been an education, and I'm having the time of my life. Before I begin, I must say a couple very important words about this podcast. I do not own the rights to any of the music played on this show. The musicians or the music labels own the copyright. I play this music under the doctrine of fair use. I am not here as a DJ, but to offer music commentary and criticism. My goal is for you to gain a larger appreciation for the bands or the musicians played here on this podcast. And I ask for you to go out and legally purchase or stream their music. Maybe even pick up some merchandise. The musicians need your support, and I hope this show contributes to spreading the good word about these bands you hear on these episodes. I do not profit in any way from this podcast. It is truly done out of my pure love of the music. So it's been so long since I have been behind the microphone. It's been quite a long hiatus. And I had to take some time off. There has been a lot of things going on in my life on a personal level and on a professional level. Personally, like many of you, you know, we are living in some really, really crazy, uncertain times dealing with COVID-19. And, when I say it's hit home, no one here is sick or anything like that. But, you know, it's made life very difficult, and we've all been having to jump through some hoops to kind of make a go of it. And it's taken away podcasting time, I guess is what I should say, and basically time that I would typically do research for the show. So it has been a while since I've had the chance to assemble together a show. And, you know, I've been working on this particular episode for about a month. So as you can imagine, it's been frustrating. I've been working on it bit by bit over the past month. And normally I can knock one of these out in a week. But it's been kind of frustrating. But also, I'm not too sure exactly when this episode is going to air. I'm going to try to get it up right away. But, you know, I've been really busy with some other really cool creative endeavors. Some of you may know, I've alluded to it in the past, but, you know, one of my other big passions in life is filmmaking. And I am a filmmaker, and I have produced now about 4 or 5 feature films. And depending on when you're listening to the show, on Sunday, November 1st, at 8 p.m., that's Eastern time, one of my feature films is going to be making an online premiere. And it's called The Assassination of Western Civilization. And everybody, the entire ABCs of Rock family is welcome to register for the event. If you want to check out some of my work, it's been a real labor of love. And if you want to, you can go to www.assassinatemovie.com and you can register for the event. It's only $9, but that's cool because you can pack the whole living room with your family and you can watch a brand new feature film for only $9. It's really worth it, and it goes to a good place. I'm going to be taking the proceeds and submitting to some film festivals when they start up again. So I would appreciate your support. That's even though I don't take any money for this show, it's a great way of supporting me and my endeavors in another way, my filmmaking endeavors. So you're always welcome to help me there if you like. So anyways, so that's assassinatemovie.com. And I look, hopefully maybe some of my fans from the podcast will show up there. And so, yeah, anyways, let's get back to the music because, you know, you're not here about for my films. You're here for listen to some really cool music. So this episode is going to be a real enjoyable one for me because, you know, I'll be playing music and discussing one of my favorite bands of all time. And for probably a 12-year period of time, they were my favorite band. I am, of course, talking about U2. Now, I realize these days, touting one's love for U2 invites some scorn from a lot of people. And I kind of understand some how U2 turned a lot of people off of just not their music, especially within the last 15 years or so, but more so their overall band image that they project. Bono has become sort of a polarizing celebrity figure. But here on the ABCs of Rock, we're here about the music, and I never get bogged down in the politics. So we're going to ignore all of that and focus on the rock, and even more so because I'm going to be focusing on the golden age of U2, which I consider to be their 80s and 90s output. There's plenty that they did after the turn of the millennium, especially the All That You Can Leave Behind album from 2001, as well as a couple bright spots on No Line on the Horizon. But in all honesty, my fandom wavered heavily around this time. So instead of spreading out this episode over their entire career, I decided to focus on what I consider my favorite era. So for new listeners, let me get the ground rules out of the way. If you've come here to listen to the hits, the singles, and my commentary on those, then you've clicked on the wrong podcast. On the ABCs of Rock, my goal is to dig deep into their catalog of music and curate my favorite tracks that fall under the radar. So I only strive to play the underrated, the underappreciated, the hidden gems, the forgotten treasures. The idea is I want to reintroduce you two to the casual listener who may only be familiar with their popular songs they've heard on the radio. So before I get to the music, I always give a little context by explaining my relationship to each band. With a band like U2, of course, everyone is going to have their own personal story how they got into the band. For someone my age, I definitely got kind of a late start. I was aware of them in the periphery throughout the late 80s, but their music never really resonated with me. I was into new wave pop and rock music at that time, and U2's sound, especially when they got huge with the Joshua Tree at the time, wasn't really resonating with me. Of course, retroactively, I would go back and fall in love with their back catalog. The first time I remember hearing U2 on the radio that I absolutely loved was when their album Octoon Baby came out and the song Mysterious Ways was released as a single. I couldn't get enough of that song and that album for that matter. So what I'd like to do is start at the beginning. U2 was formed in Dublin in 1976 while they were students at St. Fintan's High School. Amazingly, their lineup hasn't really altered all that much in their entire 46-year career. You've got, of course, Bono, born Paul Hewson, on lead vocals. The Edge, who was born David Evans, I think, on lead guitar. Adam Clayton on bass. And, of course, Larry Mullen Jr. on percussion. Like many bands, they started off as a covers band, focusing mainly on punk covers from the late 70s. I mean, that was pretty common back in the day. It actually didn't take them all that long to put out their first record, so let's get to that. On October 20th, 1980, U2 debuted with their first studio album titled Boy. It was produced by some guy named Steve Lillywhite, who was very early on in his great career. Steve would go on to produce some classic albums for artists like Peter Gabriel, Talking Heads, Psychedelic Furs, Johnny Thunders, and of course, a long-standing relationship with U2 throughout the years. I often lump their first three releases together because they do have this really similar production sound to them. Plus, their cover art also kind of ties them together with its starkness. Of the three releases, this one has always been my favorite, and picking one song wasn't easy. But when I really think about it, there is one song that stays with me long after I've heard the album, and it's the third track titled Ncat Dub. I guess that's how you pronounce it. I don't think they ever actually say the title in the song. When you think about it, it's such a unique style of song for U2. A relatively slowish mid-tempo song that incorporates a vibraphone for that matter. This is such an underrated song in their catalog. It's so dark and creepy and mysterious. And that opening guitar riff and those smashing drums. I mean, wow. And if ever there was a song that made me want to learn how to play bass guitar, it is this one. Such an amazing bass line from Adam Clayton. Bono's lyrical delivery is also so haunting. I love the Edge's outro over the final minute of the song too. He's just noodling around. It's just so perfect. Let's get to the lyrics. And I really love the second verse and the images it conjures up. And in the daylight, a blackbird makes a violent sight. And when she is done, she sleeps beside the one.
Say goodnight. She waits for me.
Of course, I couldn't play NCAT dub and not let it bleed into the heart. Consider all one song, since they both go hand in hand with each other. There is a kind of interesting cover of that song by the band The Bravery. It was a B-side to their 2005 single Fearless. It's definitely a different take on the song, but I do kind of dig it. I like The Bravery, and I'm also kind of bummed they're not around making music anymore. Well, anyways, moving on. On October 12th, 1981, U2 put out their second studio album, October. In my opinion, one of the great sophomore efforts ever recorded, and unfortunately overshadowed by and sandwiched between two other more notable releases. I love this album, actually even more than their follow-up, War. We'll get to that soon. I really have never understood the dismissal of this record. The one thing I can say about October is that, in my opinion, it's probably the only time in their entire career that the sound didn't take any type of dramatic leap away from the previous record. Going forward, U2's signature would be how they would constantly be developing and reinventing their sound. October, in many ways, has a very similar production to Boy, and I wonder if that's why, if it's considered to be the forgotten companion to their debut. Highlights for me from this record are, of course, the singles Fire and Gloria, but some of the deeper album cuts that are amazing are Stranger in a Strange Land, Is That All, Rejoice, and another one would be like Along. So many amazing songs on this one, but of course, I'm going to reserve my favorite song for the one I'm going to play. For me, that standout track on October has always been I Threw a Brick Through a Window. Larry's percussion is absolutely the centerpiece of this track. He lays down this sort of tribal beat. The Edge's guitar riffs are just sublime too. I'm a little unsure about the meaning of this song. I've always sort of interpreted it as a song about reconciliation, possibly about people's refusing to recognize what's going on around them, about being blind to their own actions until it's too late, and then seeking help, seeking guidance. For Bono, in the song, it's possibly about his brother. The lyrics are vague, but very striking. Let's get to the lyrics. I was walking into walls and back again. I just keep walking. I walk up to a window to see myself and my reflection. When I thought about it, my direction, going nowhere, going nowhere.
Thank you.
Okay, welcome back. On February 28th, 1983, U2 released War, their third studio album. Of course, this was anchored by their songs Sunday Bloody Sunday and New Year's Day. Neither I would consider a breakthrough in the United States, even though both of these songs charted very high on the U.S. main rock charts. However, the album Up and Down is possibly their most consistent effort of their career, and I don't think that's too much of a bold statement. Of all their records, I feel U2 sounds most in their element on War. They haven't drastically altered their sound. They fully embrace their music, their message, and their songwriting. Their musicianship is crisp and clean, and their lyrics are pointed. So many delicious options to choose from on War, but I'm going to play one of my favorites, the penultimate track titled Surrender. If you're not familiar with this one, I think you'll love it. It's absolute musical poetry. When I hear it, I just get lost in it. The guitar work from The Edge is absolutely incredible. And I want to say something about him for a moment. I feel like he's really an underrated guitarist. No, he's probably not in the top 25 or 35 greatest guitarists of all times. I know I'm going to catch a lot of flack for that statement. It's a list that the Rolling Stone magazine shamelessly publishes all the time. If it were to simply come down to the top 25 most creative guitarists, The Edge would absolutely be in the top 5 for me. Anyways, The Edge is absolutely ripping this song into another dimension. Also, I really love how angsty and urgent Bono's vocals and lyrics are. So let's get to those now. Oh, the city's all right with lovers and lies and bright blue eyes. Oh, the city is bright. It's brighter than day to night. Surrender, 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 surrender.
The city's all right with lovers and lies.
those backing vocals too. So sweet. What a beautiful song. All right, moving on. On October 1st, 1984, U2 released their fourth studio album, The Unforgettable Fire. It was produced by Daniel Lanois and Brian Eno. Their first collaboration with Brian Eno, actually. And for those keeping score, I think the second band in a row on this podcast in which the mega producer's name has popped up. And it will again and again, because U2 and Brian Eno have a long history together to come. Here's where I'm going to stir up some major controversy. The Unforgettable Fire, I'm not all that crazy about. It's always sounded like an incomplete album to me. It definitely has its standout tracks, of course, Pride and Bad. But really, even those two, I've really grown tired of hearing over the years. And when I do a deep dive every now and then into this album, I find the album tracks to be very lackluster compared to those on Boy, October, and War. So you can send your hate mail to abcofrockpodcast@gmail.com. I'm not saying I don't like this album. I really do like the title track and the album opener. A Sort of Homecoming, I think, is all right. That said, I will play what I feel is an underrated album highlight and my favorite on The Unforgettable Fire. We're going to hear Wire. This frenzied song starts off at breakneck speed and doesn't look back. I love it possibly because it maintains that raw post-punky vibe of their first three albums. It also is foreshadowing an era about to be ushered in for them. Adam Clayton's bass work is killer. He's always reminded me a lot of John Taylor as a bass player, especially in this era. Just listen to early Duran Duran and early U2 side by side. I think you'll hear the similar playing styles. I love Bono's primal scream vocals here too. I really love the chorus. So let's go with that. Cold, these eyes. I can't believe it. So deep inside a cold fire. Cold, this heart is slow. Heart is stone.
Innocence.
hope you enjoyed that. Such a great song. So up next is a big one. On March 9th, 1987, U2 releases The Joshua Tree, and produced by Daniel Lanois and Brian Eno, an album that catapulted them into superstardom. I don't have to sit here and tell you how big and impactful this album was. You already know. You already know probably most of the songs on here. Even some of the songs that weren't released as singles became very popular. However, the backside of this album is where I think it really shines. It's loaded with songs of hardship, revolution, friendship, and loss. Because The Joshua Tree was so front-loaded with hits, I've often found myself growing weary of hearing With or Without You, Where the Streets Have No Name, or I Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking for like the 500th time. I do adore all the songs, but I can't deny that I'm starting to get fatigue hearing all those over and over. And that these days I've been absolutely infatuated with the back half of this album. With the songs like Trip Through Your Wires and Running to Stand Still, Red Hill Mining Town, in God's Country, and this song I'm going to play, my favorite from the back half, One Tree Hill. This is such a beautiful song. The story behind the song is quite tragic as well. It was written in the memory of New Zealander Greg Carroll. Greg became friends with the band while in New Zealand. He would eventually become one of their roadies. In 1986, Greg tragically died in a motorcycle accident. But it was Greg who took U2 on a tour of the beautiful volcanic peak called One Tree Hill while they were touring for the Unforgettable Fire. Just going to leave it at that. You can do a whole bunch more research on this when you have the time, but it's a beautiful song. So let's just enjoy this one. I'm just going to go straight to the song right now. Thank you. I hope you like that one. Definitely one of the strongest songs on the Joshua Tree. I think that's probably the first time I ever skipped on quoting my favorite lyrics, but I just felt like the song needed to be played after that setup. We're at the halfway point in the show, which is a great time to mention that the ABCs of Rock is part of the Westin Media Podcast Network. Please don't hesitate to share with me your feedback of the show. I really love hearing from listeners. You can always email me at abcofrockpodcast@gmail.com. I can also be found on Facebook at ABC of Rock Podcast and on Twitter at ABC Rock Podcast. So give it a follow or reach out and let me know you're out there listening. And don't forget to subscribe. Also, if you have a chance, please take a moment to reach out and review on your preferred podcast app. It may seem insignificant, but every single rating and review adds up and helps this podcast find a larger audience. I thank you all in advance. Let's move forward with the show. So up next is an interesting one. Shortly after the Joshua Tree's release, U2 embarked on a world tour. While on the tour, they filmed a lot of footage of their tour, and it was subsequently used for a concert film titled Rattle and Hum. The concert film was released in late October 1988 to mixed reviews and relatively poor box office receipts. I actually haven't watched it in decades, but I don't recall finding it really all that engaging. However, in the conjunction with the film, they also released a highly successful album. And it's a very weird hybrid of a record. Combination of live concert recordings from their performances on both legs of the US tour, as well as some new studio recordings. If I'm to be 100% completely truthful, I really dislike this album. And I don't think I'm alone in this. And I can say that I felt this way when it came out as well. This isn't me riding the backlash bandwagon, because it has become trendy to dump on this album in recent years. But since I'm a pretty positive guy and I'm not going to dump on this album, I made a vow to find something I love about Rattle and Hum. And there are a couple highlights. I actually do enjoy some of the original studio tracks, even though I do feel they are more like Joshua Tree B-sides and leftovers, which I'm almost positive they are. A few of those highlights are Hawk Moon 269, and I really do like Desire and All I Want Is You. But one of the most unusual songs in this album comes very deep, and it's a really funky jam titled God Part 2, a spiritual sequel to the John Lennon classic from the early 70s. In that John Lennon song, he's listing off all these things that he doesn't believe in. Here, though, Bono undercuts the negativity with the lasting statement at the end of each verse, though, that he believes in love, ultimately making it a much more positive song. Musically, I just completely dig the vibe of this song. It's absolutely foreshadowing the direction they would be heading into in their next release as well. And finally, Bono's vocals are so raw. It sounds like he's shredding his vocal cords at times during the third verse through the end of the song. And here are my favorite lyrics from the third verse. Don't believe in cocaine. Got a speedball in my head. I could cut and crack you open. Did you hear what I said? Don't believe them when they tell me there ain't no cure. The rich stay healthy. The sick stay poor. I believe in love.
Don't believe a spook, but the truth is never the same without the lies he made up. Don't believe in excess, success is to give. Don't believe in riches, but you should see where I live. I believe in love. Don't believe in forces, don't believe in rage, but every time she passes by, wild folks escape. Don't believe in death row, skid row of gangs. Don't believe in the Uzi, just went off in my hand. We'll be right back.
Such a cool song. And when I said some foreshadowing, this upcoming album is where they completely turned it all on its head. Released on November 18th, 1991, was U2's seventh studio album titled Octoon Baby. It was co-produced by Daniel Lanois and Brian Eno. Like I said earlier, this was my true entry point into the band, especially when Mysterious Ways was released. On a personal note, there may not be an album I have listened to more in my lifetime than Octoon Baby, and I have never grown tired of it. But I'm smart about it. These days, I do pace myself. I probably listen to it about once a year, and that way, it still sounds fresh, and I'm still able to discover little nuances in the songs that help keep it fresh in my ears. There were four singles that charted. Not going to play any of those, but that leaves eight other songs that on their own are incredible. In fact, you could take off the four big singles, replace them with four of the B-sides. And believe me, folks, the B-sides from this album are equally incredible, and you'd still have one amazing album. So many deep cuts I want to play here, but for this show, I want to play what I feel is a song that is somewhat underrated. The diehard U2 fans probably all know and love this song. It's played very often on their tours, but because it wasn't a huge single off this album and therefore never received huge radio play or had a music video, much of the mainstream world isn't all that aware of this song's greatness. So I'm going to play what is, in my opinion, the crowning achievement of this album, Until the End of the World. Immediately, the casual listener will notice the big change in their sound. Lots of echo, reverb, and distortion. This would be something they'd adopt for during the duration of the 90s. For the most part, I bought into the new sound, but as it went on, I do agree that it was diminishing returns. For now, though, let's enjoy one of the songs from the highlights of this period. I love the writing of the song. Selecting my favorite verse wasn't easy, but I'm going with the third one. In my dream, I was drowning sorrows, but my sorrows, they learned to swim. Surrounding me, going down on me, spilling over the brim. Waves of regret and waves of joy. I reached out for the one I tried to destroy. You said you were waiting till the end of the world. We'll be right back. American singer-songwriter Patti Smith participated on a covers album, also titled Octoon Baby. But instead, the title is spelled out phonetically. It came out in 2011, and it really is the entire album. All 12 songs completely covered by different artists. It's really fantastic. And Patti Smith's version of Until the End of the World is very different. It's somber and slower, but it gives me chills. And if you like Patti, then it might be right up your alley. So check that out. So let's spin one more off this iconic record. When you listen to an album so many times, and maybe you've had this experience, there may be a song that used to be one of your least favorites, but after 29 years or so, you start to really pay attention to it, and you find a whole new appreciation for it. So is the case with this song, Ultraviolet, Light My Way. I never disliked the song, but if I were to rank all the songs in this album from 1 to 12, 25 years ago, it was probably ranked either their 10th, 11th, or 12th favorite song. I've completely flipped on it in recent years, and now it's one of my favorites. Or maybe it's just now on the level of the other songs that I love on this record. The Edge's guitar riff is the standout element of the song for me. I find it completely hypnotizing. I love how when Bono gets to the third verse, his vocals reach another plateau. This is what makes him such an amazing, unique vocalist. What he does right here on the third verse gives me chills. Let's get to the lyrics. You bury your treasure where it can't be found, but your love is like a secret that's been passed around. There is a silence that comes to a house where no one can sleep. I guess it's the price of love. I know it's not cheap. Thank you.
Sometimes I feel like I don't know. Sometimes I feel like checking out. I wanna get it wrong. Can't always be strong. And love, it won't be long.
Thank you.
On July 5th, 1993, U2 releases their eighth studio album, Zooropa. It was produced by Brian Eno, The Edge, and Flood. Flood, a.k.a. Mark Ellis, actually has been associated with the band dating back to the Joshua Tree, I think as an engineer. I'd have to check. I love the Zooropa album, but when I think about it objectively, it is one weird and avant-garde album. And it's really amazing that U2 was able to get away with putting out such an experimental alt-rock album. Have it go double platinum when the first two singles couldn't be any further from traditional radio-friendly singles, Numb and then shortly later, Lemon. It wasn't until November that year that Stay, Far Away So Close, the third single, was released. And I'll make the argument to this day that that song is by far their weakest single they have put out the entire decade. And I'm including all the singles off of Pop, if you can even remember which what those were. Anyways, like I said, a very weird album. But one I deeply appreciate, and like Octoon Baby, I still throw it on about once a year, and I find that different songs resonate with me more today than they did back in the day. One of those songs is Dirty Day. As the song slowly fades in, you hear Adam's bass line, and you know you're in for this emotional ride. Then, hold on when the song explodes about three-quarters of the way through. The edge starts shredding, loads of distortion, and the wall of noise eventually just fades away. It's truly one of their greatest songs that has never gotten the attention it deserves. I hope you can appreciate this one. Oh, and Bono. His vocals are some of the best of his career. His falsetto on this song is amazing. Sadly, I've tried to replicate his falsetto, usually in the shower. It's not good. I probably shouldn't share that visual with you. I'll have to make a note to delete that. Here's the opening verse. I don't know you. You don't know the half of it. I had a starring role. I was the bad guy who walked out. They say be careful where you aim, because where you aim, you just might hit. You can hold on to something so tight, you've already lost it.
I don't know you, but you don't know the half of it. Starring role, I was the bad guy who walked out. They say be careful where you aim, 'cause where you aim you just might hit. You can hold on to something so tight, you've already lost it. Dragging me down, that's not the way it used to be. You can't even remember what I'm trying to forget. Explanations I don't even understand. If you need someone to blame, throw a rock in the air, you'll hit someone guilty. For further to serve in one. Oh, let's never turn father to son. Mm-hmm. look thicker than ink. You wanna say the things as simple as you think. Wake up. Some things you can't get around. I'm in you more so when they put me in the ground.
I have one more song to go for the show. This has been a lot of fun, but also difficult because U2 has such an extensive career with so many phases, so many eras to highlight. Going to jump to their ninth studio album, Pop, released on March 3rd, 1997. I did skip over Passengers, and but I think that's okay because a couple weeks ago when I did Emptying the Vault, the letter P, I did get to play my favorite song of Passengers, Your Blue Room. So that was, I think we covered that, and that's probably all I need to cover from that album. So Pop was produced by Flood, Howie B., and Steve Osborne. So for the first time, in I don't know how long, U2 brought on some fresh blood to work on their next record. And this is where I feel some fans started to jump off the bandwagon. Pop heavily leaned into techno and electronica. One has to wonder how much band members Larry Mullen Jr. or Adam Clayton were involved in the production. I mean, they were credited as drums and percussion and bass guitar, as you'd expect, but this album is so heavily produced with its synthesized sounds and programmed effects and keyboards, it's hard to recognize U2 anymore underneath this sheath of a techno band. That said, I think they did a great job marketing the album with the two strong singles up front, Discotheque and Staring at the Sun, although the latter was destroyed by overplay on the radio. I don't love Pop. It's definitely in my lower third of my ranked U2 albums, but I do appreciate it for what it is. And I'm sad that after this, U2 would abandon their avant-garde and progressive ways toward their music. I probably would appreciate this album a little bit more if it was cut down a little. It does feel long. I mean, it is a complaint I don't usually have. The album as a whole also has kind of an inconsistent feel to it. It doesn't completely flow for me, and I find myself on the back end especially getting a little impatient with it. But despite my grievances, I want to play my favorite song from Pop, and I'm really curious if anyone else out there loves this song as much as I do. The song is Gone. What really does it for me on the song is the insane guitar riff from The Edge. I don't even know if I can call it a riff, but I know I love it. Larry holds it together with some clutch drumming. It's just great. It's beautiful. You know, I haven't selected many choruses from on the show yet, so let's do one for this song. And not that the chorus is my favorite lyrics of the song, but it's my favorite vocal moment of the song, when Bono sings, "I'll be up with the sun." It's the most uplifting moment on this album for me, and it puts the biggest smile on my face. So here's the full chorus. Goodbye, you can keep this suit of lights. I'll be up with the sun. I'm not coming down. I'm not coming down. I'm not coming down. And there you have it, my 10 underrated and underappreciated songs from U2. You can send your feedback and hate mail to abcarockpodcast@gmail.com. It's all good. Music is totally subjective. I could probably do the show all over again with 10 brand new songs. Anyways, thank you so much for taking this journey with me this week, and I do hope that the wait isn't as long for the next episode. Life has been extremely busy lately, but when I have the time, I will drop another show in this feed, so please stay subscribed. And please don't hesitate to reach out to me on social media and on Facebook at ABC of Rock Podcast, on Facebook or on Twitter at ABC Rock Podcast. I love getting feedback and messages letting me know what you think of the show. It's been an absolute pleasure to be here as your host and entertainer over the last hour. I realize that there are literally tens of thousands of podcasts out there that you could be listening to, and I sincerely thank you for spending your time with me on this show. It means the world to me. The ABCs of Rock is part of the Westin Media Podcast Network. Thank you again, and have a great week, everyone.